Call this meeting. We'll call this meeting to order. Welcome to the Board of Health meeting for October. We will start with the approval of minutes. August 6th, 2025 minutes were attached to your agenda. And I imagine you've had an opportunity to take a look at them. I open for a motion or approval.
Move approval, Messer.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second. Siri Jenkins.
Thank you. Is there further discussion on the minutes or other changes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes for August 6th as is, as attached, please respond by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those that do not approve, nay. Those are approved. This is the part of the agenda where we have public comment. Do we have any public comment tonight?
We do not.
We do not. Okay, thank you. And this would also be the appropriate time for members of the body to make any required disclosures or recusals under the city's ethics code, any of those today. Obviously, if something comes up in the meeting, you can say it then too. Seeing none, we will move on to new business. We will start with Board of Health resolutions. Authorization to accept additional funds from the state of Wisconsin Department of Health Services for communicable disease control and prevention, which is resolution 23. Can I have a motion for approval, please?
Motion to approve.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second, Messer.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or further discussion on this item, which was attached to your agenda? Seeing none, all those in favor of acceptance of resolution 23, accepting additional funds from the state of Wisconsin Department of Health Services for communicable disease control and prevention, please respond by saying aye.
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 Aye. Those that approve, disapprove, nay. That is approved. We will next go into presentation. Our last meeting, there were questions about the immunization program vis-a-vis some of the federal cuts that have happened. And we asked for a presentation from the staff, and I believe that is what's up next.
Yes, and I think, why don't y'all just come on up and sit over here? So we've got folks who are lead and support our immunization program. I think Erica Raybell is going to be presenting. Aaron Folkinghorn is the supervisor of the IMS program, and Nate Patton is our lead worker.
But great,
they
thank
are
you for
a well-oiled machine.
Yep, thank you for coming and answering our call. Thank you.
Hopefully, we've answered the questions you asked. And welcome the conversation. So I'll turn it over to you.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. As Janelle mentioned, I'm Erica Rebale, and I'm the public health aide for the immunization program with public health. So who we are, our FTE staff have made up of one supervisor, one lead worker, myself, a full-time PHA, one partial FTE PHA who works 2 3-hour clinics
Can
per
I,
month.
Sorry, do not I everyone knows slower? Your our acronyms. If I
sure,
it's a public health aide. Sorry,
public health aide. Yes, which is myself. Okay. Yep. So one public health aide and then one partial FTE public health aide who works 2 3-hour clinics per month, and then we have 8 partial FTE RNs who work 3 3-hour clinics per month. We also have some LTE staff, 2 non-clinical front desk staff, and 5 vaccinators who all work between 0 and 2 clinics per month. So who we work with? So we our priority population include uninsured and underinsured children and adults and children eligible under Vaccines for Children program, or VFC. We serve mostly adults since most VFC eligible kids have access to healthcare through Badger Care coverage, which includes vaccines. We are, we do offer all routine vaccines for kiddos 0 to 18, and we offer most routine vaccines for adults 19 plus, including seasonal flu and COVID vaccine. There are a couple of adult vaccines we aren't able to offer that are more cost prohibitive, and those include shingles, RSV, and travel vaccines. All of our vaccines are offered free of charge. We don't have a billing process. Mostly that's because we couldn't bill for VFA vaccines, which is vaccines for adult that is provided. So the administrative burden to be able to bill for 20 to 30% of the shots, vaccines that we give, just wouldn't even allow us to break even. We offer appointment-based clinics and mobile clinics. In addition to providing different levels of vaccine response during breakouts, we also provide public education and outreach. This includes recall postcards, outreach to kiddos under two, who, as you can imagine, receive lots of vaccines before that age. And we want to make sure that they're caught up before they enter school. And then we also send out postcards to kiddos at 4, 11, and 16. Again, all ages where routine vaccines required for school are due. And we also send to adults 65 and older, as they are also due for some important vaccines at that age. Lastly, we do offer seasonal vaccine communication for back to school, COVID and flu, and then any relevant diseases such as pertussis or measles. So we have 8 regular clinics per month at our South Park Street office and East Washington office. These clinics are appointment only, and we have 12 appointments per clinic. We have 2 mobile clinics per month. These are walk-in only, and some of those are in partnership with O'Connell Pharmacy. O'Connell is a great partner who is able to provide vaccines and bill insurances. So clients who have insurance are still able to come to some of our mobile clinics when O'Connell is present. And also when that they are also vaccine for children program. So they're able to offer vaccines for kiddos on Badger Care or who are uninsured. So help us see more kiddos at our mobile clinics when they're there. But most recently, we haven't been able to offer routine adult vaccines at our mobile clinics due to some vaccines for adult budget limitations that I'll touch on later. We do have a couple of other partnerships. We help provide some department purchase flu vaccine for MediClinic and Edgewood each year. So far in 2025, we have given 648 doses to 184 children under 19, and we've provided 1,604 doses to 554 adults 19 plus. As you can see, the majority of our clients are adults, and most of the adults we see need an assortment of Tdap, hepatitis B, MMR, varicella, and flu and COVID during the fall and winter months. We generally book out about a month year round, but this time of year, our busiest time of year, October to December, we can book out as much as 2 or more months at our regular vaccine clinics. So we are quite lucky in that our immunization staffing level is higher than most local health departments, which leads the only limiting factor for us giving vaccines is really our adult vaccine supply and the child vaccine demand. So we are currently only able to see, we're having to limit our current available slots for adults to 7 per clinic and have at times run out of certain vaccines.
When you say 7 per clinic, is that 7 per day or 7 per
week? So those 8 clinics that we have per month at our offices, there are of those 12 slots, 7 are designated for adults. That being also children could.
You say a clinic, what does that mean? Does that mean that like, you have a clinic on a Thursday afternoon for 4 hours? Yes. Or?
Yep, exactly. So we have 8 3-hour clinics. Range somewhere in the morning, some in the afternoon. We have a couple of evening availability.
In that 3-hour clinic, there would be 7 adult slots or whatever.
Yes, exactly. Yep, but unlimited kiddo vaccine. So we could see 12 kids, but unfortunately we'd only be able to see 7 out of 12 adults at that clinic. Great, great question. Yeah, so we are one of only a few VFA providers in our area, and currently the only one accepting new clients. In the future, it looks like we're going to have to continue to limit our adult appointment availability due to the state Section 317 funds being limited. Fortunately, we do not have any limitations on our VFC budget. We have plenty of vaccines for children to provide, but the demand is lower for VFC vaccine since most VFC eligible children do have access to providers and vaccines through Badger Care. That being said too, fall is really high demand for back to school and flu and COVID. So we generally have better access to get in for kiddos on Badger Care, you know, than most clinics in the area. And of course, filling that gap of kids that are uninsured. So our funding sources are the federal VFC program supplies all vaccines for children. And in 2024, our VFC orders totaled 191,320. Our VFA program vaccines for adults is state allocated funds under the 3 Section B. They supply most of our vaccines that we provide for adults. As I mentioned, we had some budget limitations that we are made aware of for VFA earlier this year. And trying to plan for this new fiscal year that just started October 1st, we requested VFC vaccine to the dollar amount of $230,385. And we learned just last week that we were only, will only receive $83,803.44. So as you can see, quite a significant shortfall, less than half of what we requested. Our public health budget pays for most, all of our FTE staff, most supplies and services, and then some flu vaccine for adults that, again, we purchase for local partners to help provide. And that budget is $406,900. And lastly, our GAC grant is received through the state. That helps us pay for 0.2 FTE of an FTE public health aide. All of our LTE staff, some supplies and services, postcard outreach, but unfortunately we aren't able to provide or purchase any vaccines using that grant money.
When you say requested amount, $230,000, got $83,000, from whom was the money requested?
From the state through the Vaccines for Adult program, which is that that Section 317 funds.
And so the state gets it from the federal government, presumably. Is that right?
And their funding has not changed, correct me if I'm wrong, in a number of years, though the demand may be changing.
I see.
So they're, I want to be clear, I don't believe it's the result of any decrease in funding. It's the result that they're receiving. It's the need to distribute that differently and support.
Got it. Increased demand. Thanks.
Yeah. So a couple of other things to note. Right now, our VFC Vaccines for Children funds and that 317 funds for the VFA program are stable through 2026. But beyond that is really unknown. We were very lucky in some good news that our GAC grant was actually increased, a one-time increase this year. That it is stable, you know, through the fiscal year of 2026, but that may decrease to previous levels or potentially even lower. And then also important to point out is that in general, immunizations grants don't allow you to purchase vaccine. So we wouldn't be able to help make up some of that shortfall using grant money. So looking kind of ahead, if our 317 budget was decreased, adult vaccine would be even more limited. We could consider purchasing some additional additional vaccine through department budget, but that would be quite expensive. And unfortunately, there are no free alternatives for vaccines for uninsured adults. If our public health budget was reduced, we'd have to look at some staff reallocation and decreasing FTE, likely starting with LTEs first. And if that GAC grant was decreased, we may need to reduce frequency of mobile clinics or stop them altogether. And we may not be able to run that flu and COVID specific clinics in the fall. So digging into the numbers a bit more, as I mentioned earlier, the cost of the vaccines that we requested from the VFA program was around $230,000. Our true allocation is just over $83,000. So that leaves us with a shortfall of $147,000. So I think it's important to note that that $130,000 would have allowed our program to start once again offering unlimited adult appointments at our clinics. That's both our regular scheduling clinics and also our mobile clinics. And we would have also been able to add shingles vaccine to our offerings for adults. But you know, with this just sort of reduced allocation across the board, just spread more thin, we've had to significantly adjust our program. After learning of those VFA limitations earlier this year, we used to schedule unlimitedly for adults. We reduced that down to 9 adults scheduled per clinic at max. And now we've had to drop that down to 7 adults scheduled per clinic. And we may need to reduce that farther if we start offering adult vaccines at mobile clinics again. But also looking at this shortfall of $147,000, if we attempted to purchase that vaccine outside of the vaccine programs, that would cost us $237,000. So significantly more to try to bridge that gap.
What do we do to make sure the people that we do vaccinate have no other way to get vaccinated? Do we do any means testing? Do we do recruitment? If I wanted to make an appointment and I thought about it early enough, I could get a vaccination there, even though I have many different ways to get it paid for.
We really just screen people and ask them if they have insurance or if they're underinsured when they make the appointment.
And if they do have insurance, do you encourage them to go someplace else?
Yeah. We really give them resources, including pharmacies that might be available or their own primary care provider or other, you know, Costco, Walgreens, places like that to get vaccines.
So we do make some attempt to make sure that we're seeing these.
Yep.
It's actually a fairly big portion of my job. Calls from the immunization lines, folks looking for vaccines, they may not have access to it through their primary care provider. So lots of education about going to a pharmacy, other means. I don't know why, but it seems like providers in the area don't always, or insurance companies maybe let folks know what other options they have. So I think what's great about our program is I have that time to be able to have those conversations with folks and try to help troubleshoot where they can find vaccines that are covered by their insurance, which is nice. So looking at the current landscape, we know there's been lots of changes at the federal level, and there is the potential that some additional changes to vaccine guidance could still come down the pike, and that could affect what vaccines we're able to give kids and adults. We saw this already happen with COVID vaccine this year. Just today, I was finally able to order some COVID vaccine for kiddos, and I'm still waiting to get word from the state to order any for adults. And that's been a challenge for us and something that private providers don't generally deal with. They have more flexibility since they don't have to follow at times the same rules that we do, where the programs that we get our vaccines through. If we are looking at our 317 and GAC funds being decreased, that would really affect our adult and mobile vaccine availability the most. you know, especially this time of year, having flu and COVID only vaccines really helps allow access to our regular clinics, those 8 clinics a month. If we didn't have those weekly clinics, we would be looking at most of our appointments this time of year being filled up with flu and COVID only vaccines. And then that would really limit our capacity to be able to see kiddos that are needing back to school vaccines or adults needing other routine vaccinations. So having that flexibility in our program to offer, you know, COVID and flu vaccines weekly and also our regular just really increases our capacity overall. And additionally, learning from VFA earlier this year that they weren't expected to make it till the end of the year of their fiscal year, which ended September 30th, they would run out of vaccine. We immediately started, you know, thinking of how we could maximize what we're being given. So an example of that would be for hepatitis B, oftentimes we would recommend that our adult clients would get a combination vaccine of Hep A and Hep B. And we took a look at what those doses cost are actually cheaper separating them. So we made that change to offer them separately instead of in combination. And taking it one step further, we also identified a cheaper alternative Hep B vaccine that was offered through the VFA program that we've opted for to allow the monies we are given to stretch even further and have a further reach with our adult clients. So as we look ahead, upcoming focus, outbreak potential, we have been working on quite a bit of measles preparedness that has been ongoing for some time as measles has been spreading nationwide. And of course, we've been hard at work with back to school prep and respiratory season. Somehow I skipped over a really important partnership. Did we skip a slide? This 8 clinics a month. And we had a couple of questions along that. But something that we've come across or something that's been really helpful is we have several school-based clinics in partnership with SSM Health. Thank you. Yes. We did, but I think we got a little bit waylaid talking about who we fit in during these clinics. So we'll back up a little bit. My apologies, but this clinic, this slide, our clinics, again, we have 8 regular clinics per month out of both of our offices at South Park and East Washington. Those are by appointment only. And as I mentioned, 12 appointments at each of those clinics available. We have 2 mobile clinics per month that are walk-in only. And I did touch on this with O'Connell Pharmacy helping us. They're able to provide vaccines for insured folks, but also help us with VFA or VFC kiddos, I should say. We also have 5 dairy farm clinics a month on site at several farms in Dane County. Of course, I mentioned our COVID and flu clinics weekly during respiratory season. And as what brought us back to this page is school-based clinics that we do in partnership with SSM is a pretty significant reach. Most of the kiddos attending these school-based clinics are VFC eligible kiddos. Previously, we used to run our own back-to-school clinics where we saw 12 to 20 kids during our clinics that we had increased number of in October. And at these SSM clinics that we help out with, we're seeing thousands of kiddos. And again, most of those are VFC eligible children. So a pretty cool partnership and reach in our community and in county.
Can I interject? I believe that's UW Health is also providing staff.
Yeah, it's a great partnership.
Bigger partnership. Yes. A lot of the with big healthcare systems here.
Yes.
SSM is coordinating and then mm-hmm. UW Health is also providing providers in showing up and administering vaccine.
In fact, I think most of our community clinics are helping in some way, providing vaccinators or mm-hmm. folks who are just running vaccines back and forth, helping with the flow of the clinic, which is chaotic and also wonderful. So it's a great.
Sorry, I assume a dairy farm clinic is you have a clinic at a farm and other folks on neighboring farms or rural areas can go there for a shot to make it easier? Or is the dairy farm clinic something else?
It's mainly for the workers on the farm. who may not be able to, because of their work schedules or things like that, leave the farm. And so we're able to go there and provide. It started out as immunizations and TB testing, but we've also expanded to sexual and reproductive health services as well.
How large are those? How many people can
you? It varies anywhere from like 4 employees a month to, or per site to up to 20 sometimes, depending on who wants services and who's available at that time. Thank you.
Did want to mention too, for the school-based clinics, we talked about SSM coordinating, UW Health helping out as well. But I just want to give credit to everybody else, like Meritor contributes staff, GHC contributes staff. I know Quartz has been involved as well. And then the school districts like MMSD, Verona, and Sun Prairie. So we get help from tons. I probably missed some as well, but tons of different partners.
It's a joint. It's a joint effort to vaccinate these kids. So it's great. All right. Looping back to the end.
Are we finding in Dane County that the childhood vaccine demand is going down at all? They go up the back to school, or I guess you kind of have to, but obviously we hear a lot about parents increasingly not wanting to vaccinate their children.
We're seeing a lot of that in media. If we look at school rates, which are our best quality data to be able to look at, over the past 3 years, we saw rates slightly increase, and then just last school year slightly decrease again to where they were at 3 years ago. Overall, we're not seeing a significant increase or decrease since the pandemic, but the pandemic did lead to a significant decrease in overall childhood rates. So we're still kind of coming back up from pre-pandemic levels.
Yeah, so that concludes our presentation. Again, I'm Erica with the immunization program with Public Health. We're happy to answer any other questions that you all have. It's been great being here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Any questions?
What sorts of efforts do you make to advertise the availability of kid vaccinations?
We do our postcard outreach, where we mail postcards out to folks that we know have children in their homes or that may be behind on certain vaccines. We also work with social media, our communications team, to get lots of social media posts out. O'Connell Pharmacy also advertises when they're able to join us on certain clinics.
Our mobile partners.
Also. Yep. Depending on which location we're at, they definitely heavily disseminate information in advance of the clinic that we're at.
Direct outreach to like school staff who then put it in school newsletters.
In multiple languages as well.
Correct. Yes.
And daycares.
Yeah. Daycares. Yes. Thank you.
Sometimes social media ads.
I was going to say, I got an MMSD email today about the vaccination clinics.
Nice.
Awesome.
Well, good. Love it. Love to hear that.
Pictures so we can see our speakers, not ourselves.
Oh, it's great. Any other questions? I think we can't see you. So if you have any other questions, just ask them, please. Okay. Alder Pritchett.
Yes. You know, given the outbreak of measles in Texas, and then other flown to other states, you know, do you have like a tracking system in place, you know, especially now that school has been in session, you know, for the past 5-6 weeks? And if that tracking trend is either up and or down, especially for vaccinations or those seeking vaccinations amongst the K-12 cohort?
So for vaccines specifically, we don't have real-time vaccine rate tracking because of the lack of high-quality data we can get from our systems and the amount of administrative burden it would put on schools to continue to track that multiple times. So we do have them track at the beginning of our school year. And that's coming up due in the next week or two. Where we will have some data on MMR rates, which MMR is measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine. Mm-hmm. But we don't have any other time points throughout the school year where we're able to get similar high quality data. I know for non-vaccine data, though, our communicable disease team definitely has systems in place for tracking cases and things like that.
Thank you. Yes.
Now, were you also speaking to just general surveillance? You were speaking specifically to vaccines, correct?
Correct. You know, especially knowing that there has been a level of hesitancy, you know, especially amongst, you know, the K through 12 population. And so I was, as I said, I was just wondering, you know, whether or not, you know, parents now that the kids are back in session, you know, whether or not, you know, you've seen an uptick in that. But I do understand your question, you know, you're related to, you know, the things that you have to do in terms of tracking. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Just wanted to say great job and thank you very much.
Thank you. I'd like to ask for a motion to accept the report to the board.
So moved, Mouser.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor of accepting the report, please respond by saying aye.
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 Thank you. Those that do not approve, nay. Okay, that is accepted. Thank you very much for your time. We will go next to committee reports. I do not have a report. Janelle, do you have anything that you would like to share?
Sure. I'll start with some local, situational awareness. And thanks, team. Appreciate it. Nicely done. Some of which I've already tried to share with you in writing, but just want to circle up. So last week, the county executive released her budget. This week, the mayor released her executive budget. There were no changes to what we submitted in the city executive operating budget. The budget that we submitted to the county that included the reduction budget was included, and then the county executive also made some additional changes to close the structural deficit. So for public health, all employees, I should say, across the county were then in the budget will be receiving a 1% wage reduction. And then being provided an additional 20.8 hours of holiday or benefit time, which is roughly the equivalent of a 1% reduction. Another mechanism to support closing that deficit is positions in addition to what departments submitted were eliminated. And so for public health, we have had three positions vacant for a period of time as we've been trying to identify. We don't get positions as we've been trying to identify how we want to best use those vacancies. Two of those ongoing vacant positions have been put up for elimination in the county executive's budget to remove that from levy. So that included one humane officer position and then a public health planner position. And then there were some other miscellaneous things that did not impact public health as much or very much at all to close that gap. But wanted to name those things are happening as we are about to kick off the hearings to the city finance and county personnel and finance committees next week with the joint meeting. Any of you are welcome and encouraged to participate should you want to listen in on that meeting or participate as Board of Health members. Next Tuesday, we will present our budget to that to those joint committees at 5 o'clock. We are, I would say, fortunate that we are on the second night of those hearings because we will be up, I believe, first to support our county colleagues joining. The city is hosting this year, and then the county will be guests at that meeting. And then from there, each legislative branch has the opportunity to offer amendments and go through that amendment process before final budgets are voted on for the county November 3rd, and then for the city, hopefully, I'm going to cross my fingers and say November 11th, but I don't know if I've been through a one-night operating budget and capital budget hearing in a long time. So anywhere between the 11th and 13th of November is when the city will vote on the budget. So are there any questions about that before I give a little what's happening in the public health world with the shutdown update?
Will you be physically at those meetings, Janelle?
No, it's a hybrid. You can, I believe it's actually all virtual.
Can you send a note around?
I will send that out.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely, thank you. So then you might be asking what is the impact of the shutdown on public health? So right now, nothing. But that doesn't mean it may not be anything. And so the way that we're trying to make sense of everything is to identify what could be impacted first. We believe should the shutdown continue, I've heard some contradictory information, but nothing's coming out concrete, that the program that could be first impacted would be our WIC program. Just yesterday, I read some news that said that there might be a mechanism to continue those benefits, but I have not seen much detail since some news headlines about that. But we, every state may have a different experience with WIC, given the reserves that they have and other resources that may be provided from the state to support that program, those states to support that program beyond the federal grant. But what we know to be true as of today is that the state has enough funding to support WIC in Wisconsin through the end of this month for participants to receive food benefits. There's funding through the end of the year in that program to support staff. Not all of our staff are funded with the state WIC grant. That is, staff are funded by both the state WIC grant and city and county tax levy. So we are doing some analysis and having conversations to figure out how to make sense and what tools might be and resources might be available should there not be additional funding to support that program. But monthly, our program administers about $383,000 in food benefits to 5,800 individuals, or about 3,700 families. And those individuals are part of those families, but children can receive benefits. There's 26, the kind of average packages are $26 a month per child, $47 for postpartum or pregnant individuals, and then $52 for breastfeeding individuals. So those packages can kind of be combined. Just a reminder that WIC is not an emergency food program. It's a supplemental nutrition program where it provides a lot of nutrition education, breastfeeding education and support, and then allows us to have some eyes on and make referrals to participants, to other programs for our participants. So we believe about 50% of those folks are also receiving SNAP, and an individual can receive about $300 a month in SNAP benefits, or a family of four is about $1,000. So ours is a small portion of what folks may be receiving in a food benefit, but something that we're paying careful attention to. The rest of our programs, we only receive, as a reminder, about $2.5 million in federal funding every year. The majority of that is to support the WIC program. But that would be the first thing that we would anticipate could have an impact should the shutdown continue and there's no emergency or relief being provided outside of that. And then, you know, we're waiting to see what will happen next and try to make sense of all the different potential policy implications for public health within the current budget proposal, which is wide ranging from everything from immunizations to violence prevention and injury, violence and injury prevention, to communicable disease, to changes in lead and toxic exposure, both research and then the potential connection to funds to support any programming associated with that. But it is far too early to actually understand what that could trickle down into. So that's kind of the state of where we are right now. Happy to take questions. Hope I can answer them. Not sure I would be, but we'll see.
Are there any questions that Janelle may or may not be able to answer?
Trying to make sense of things, but.
Go ahead, Alder. Yep, go ahead. Go ahead, Alder.
Yes, you know, one quickie question. You're providing, you know, like an outlook for potential kinds of things that could happen in terms of the planning, given especially now that the government is shut down. But I want to kind of fast forward to something, especially because it could impact, you know, like the budget moving forward for 2026, especially as it relates to the new men's shelter that's going up. And the concern that I have is, has there been any outreach to the Board of Health regarding the planning of that particular structure? And I'm asking that question primarily because as someone who has, who knows intimately all about communicable diseases and vermin and things like that, you know, I have some concerns about whether or not plans are in the works for looking at how to go about mitigating, you know, communicable diseases, and especially when I think about vermin, you know, treatment and control in that particular structure, you know, as it was described, you know, just this past Tuesday night, I kind of gathered myself, you know, that the planning, you know, little has been done to kind of think ahead, plan ahead. You know, I always say plan ahead. It wasn't raining when Noah built the ark. So my question then again is, has there been outreach regarding, you know, what you should do intake wise? How do you deal with, you know, bed bugs? We know that we're heading into flu season. It peaks, you know, coming up. What do they have in place, okay, for that? Especially when we know that we have people living in pods where the probability of spreading a communicable disease is high. So, and as I said, it's those kinds of things that can, in so many ways, affect, you know, what they want to do in terms of sheltering. Because if it's not dealt with or they don't have plans to deal with it, you know, the building could be shut down. So, you know, has there been outreach?
So, yeah, thanks for the question, Alder. I can't say that there has been outreach specific to the development of the new shelter. What I can say is during the pandemic, we established very strong relationships between our infection control practitioners and our communicable disease team and the service providers across the county to support them in their infection control practices. We have a handbook that we've shared with them, and there has been a lot of work that has been moved forward. I can't tell you how that is being implemented today, but with recommendations for infection control practices in communal settings that perhaps we had not previously been considered or been able to be resourced in the way that started during the pandemic. So I can't answer that all the way, but I can tell you that we have done a lot of work to help build the understanding of how to minimize risk of transmission of a variety of different things, and including at different points of time, working with different providers around resources that they may want to invest in to support eliminating or preventing other nuisances, as you mentioned, such as bed bugs or things like that.
Should there be?
Pardon me?
Should there be? I mean, as I said, you know, a major concern for me, you know, is this structure, you know, is being built and designed to shelter 250 homeless men. And if, let's say, for example, they don't have a good intake process, if they don't know, you know, new people are coming in and out all the time. You have no idea where they're coming from. But if you don't have a plan in place, then the entire building is for naught, because it has to be shut down because of, you know, tracking a little bed bug or some lice or whatever. Or let's say someone comes in with a communicable disease. So that's why I'm saying prevention is very, very important. And if, you know, they haven't outreached, the question again is, should there be?
Again, we are happy to work with them. You know, they're sure they can always call us. I don't know if the same folks that we have been working with are the same folks that are in development, working on this development. And so there has been a lot of work that we have done to work with many partners who are part of the development of this shelter. So I can't say with 100% certainty that they are relying on the resources and experiences and relationships that we've had, but we are happy to provide our support to them if they are not.
Thank you.
Thank you for the question. Any other questions for Janelle? All right, thanks, Janelle. At this point, I will say that our next meeting is Wednesday, November 5th, hybrid. Do we have a person lined up already?
Do not.
So we will send out an email to see who is willing to come in. It's always beautiful downtown in November, absolutely. I will take a motion for adjournment, please.
Motion to adjourn.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Okay, yes, sir.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of adjournment, please respond by saying aye.
All right.
Aye.
Aye.
Those that do not approve, nay. All right. Thank you. Thanks for your time. Have a great rest of your day.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.